The history of Black Britain isn't a footnote, it's a vital thread woven through the nation's entire tapestry. For centuries, this history remained largely invisible, overshadowed by narratives that portrayed Britain as ethnically homogeneous until post-World War II immigration. Yet archaeological discoveries tell a different story. The Ivory Bangle Lady, a high-status mixed-race woman buried in Roman York during the 3rd century, and the Beachy Head Lady, a young African woman who lived in southeast England around 200 AD, provide tangible evidence of early Black presence. Their careful burials and good physical condition suggest they weren't enslaved but held respected positions in Roman British society. Imagine walking through a museum and realizing that Britain's multicultural story began not decades, but millennia ago. This revelation fundamentally transforms our understanding of British identity. After Rome's fall, Britain was largely cut off from Africa for a millennium. Medieval Europeans' understanding of Africa came primarily through ancient writers who mixed accurate observations with fantastic speculation. The Hereford Cathedral's Mappa Mundi, c. 1300, even depicted Africa as home to monstrous races with faces on their chests.
When England finally entered the African trade in the 1530s, the relationship between Europeans and Africans was fundamentally different from later colonial encounters. African kingdoms like Oyo, Dahomey, and Benin possessed sophisticated administrative systems and military power that often made Europeans look unimpressive by comparison. Dutch trader Peter de Maurais noted in 1602 that Africans were very ware in their bargaining and will not lose one spark of gold of any value. These weren't primitive societies easily duped by European traders. They were savvy commercial partners. Everything changed when John Hawkins pioneered the English triangular slave trade in 1562. Arriving in Sierra Leone, he got into his possession, partly by the sword and partly by other means, 300 Negroes, then sailed to Hispaniola to exchange them for valuable commodities. His profitable venture attracted elite investors, including Queen Elizabeth I herself. Have you ever wondered how seemingly ordinary business decisions can transform into historical atrocities? This was one such moment, a commercial innovation that would lead to centuries of human suffering.
By the 18th century, Britain had become the dominant slave trading nation in the North Atlantic. The wealth generated transformed cities like Bristol, Liverpool, and Glasgow into boom towns. We often celebrate the Industrial Revolution through heritage sites and museums focusing on coal, iron, and factory towns, yet rarely acknowledge that the cotton industry, employing 1.5 million people by Victoria's reign, relied on cotton harvested by enslaved Africans in America. This economic transformation brought thousands of Black people to Britain, some enslaved, some free, establishing a continuous Black presence that continues unbroken to the present day. Black Georgians worked as household servants, liveried coachmen, sailors, dock workers, and tavern employees. They weren't concentrated in distinct communities, but scattered throughout London, forming partnerships, friendships, and marriages across racial lines. When given access to education, some demonstrated remarkable abilities. Consider Phyllis Wheatley, who became a servant at age 8 and mastered English with astonishing speed before learning French and Latin. Her published neoclassical poetry was ecstatically received in Britain and parts of America. The legal status of slaves in Britain remained deeply ambiguous until the landmark Somerset case of 1772. When James Somerset, a Virginia slave owned by Charles Stuart, escaped after being brought to London, he was recaptured and chained aboard a ship bound for Jamaica. Somerset's godparents secured a writ of habeas corpus, and Granville Sharp assembled an impressive legal team to fight for his freedom. After months of legal arguments, Lord Mansfield finally ruled that the power of a master over his slave could only be permitted if recognized by the country's law. His famous words, "It is so odious that nothing can be suffered to support it but positive law," concluded with, "The black must be discharged." Though Mansfield attempted to limit the case's scope, his reluctant judgment had far-reaching consequences, emboldening abolitionists and enraging slave owners. What if someone had told you that a single court case could fundamentally reshape a nation's moral compass? This was precisely what happened with Somerset's case, a legal decision that helped spark a movement that would eventually abolish the slave trade throughout the British Empire. The abolition movement, starting with minority religious groups in the 1770s-80s, grew into a national campaign against Britain's slave trade. The Society for Effecting the Abolition of the Slave Trade led groundbreaking mass campaigns, gathering 1.5 million petition signatures and organizing boycotts. Former slave Oladua Equiano's best-selling autobiography proved particularly influential. Following the 1807 abolition of the slave trade, approximately 3,000 black loyalists who had fled American slavery were relocated to Nova Scotia. When promised land failed to materialize, their leader Thomas Peters petitioned London, resulting in their resettlement in West Africa. In 1792, the Freedom Fleet transported them to establish Freetown, where they developed a unique Creole culture blending African, American, and British elements. By the Civil War's eve, the 4 million enslaved Africans in America constituted the most valuable commodity in the American economy. The South had grown so wealthy from cotton that by the 1860s, it enjoyed the world's highest per capita income. The Deep South formed one half of a global transatlantic industrial economy, with the Cotton Kingdom serving as the economic twin of Manchester, Cottonopolis. When war came in 1861, Lincoln's government declared a blockade of all southern ports. By early 1862, Britain's cotton imports fell to half their pre-war levels. The impact was devastating. Cotton prices quadrupled, and by year's end, 70% of Lancashire's mill workers were unemployed in what became known as the Cotton Famine. Yet remarkably, these workers, despite their own hardships, largely supported the Union cause. Working-class Britons held massive pro-Union demonstrations, and Manchester workers sent a letter of support to Lincoln, who responded by thanking them for their sublime Christian heroism. Isn't it extraordinary how people suffering economic devastation could still stand on principle against slavery? While the 1948 arrival of the Empire Windrush with 492 West Indian passengers is often seen as the start of Black British history, the Black presence in Britain predates this. In 1944, there were actually 150,000 black people in Britain, mostly African-American GIs, compared to fewer than 20,000 in 1948. Post-war racial tensions culminated in events like the 1964 Smithwick election, where racist campaign tactics prevailed. The 1980s marked a period of black community activism and historical reclamation. Important historical figures were rediscovered, including Oladua Equiano, Ignatius Sancho, the first known black Briton to vote, and Mary Seacole, who nursed British soldiers during the Crimean War. Today's black British population of about 2 million, with half in London, represents a continuous presence that extends far beyond the Windrush myth of 1948. This longer historical perspective reveals that Black British history isn't a separate narrative, but an integral part of Britain's story.